Welcome to Weekly Wings, your go-to podcast from DroneLife.com, where we soar through the latest in drone technology, regulation updates, and exciting innovations. Each week, join Samuel Terry and I as we navigate the drone industry, offering expert insights, interviews with key figures eventually, and a bird's eye view of how drones are shaping our world. From commercial applications to recreational adventures, Weekly Wings delves into how these remarkable vehicles are impacting construction, education, agriculture, filmmaking, delivery services, and much more. Whether you're a professional drone operator, a hobbyist, or just drone curious, tune in to stay informed and inspired as we explore the heights of what's possible in the world of drones. Subscribe now and never miss an episode of Weekly Wings, where the future is looking
How's it going?
Please don't expire on us. We need every viewer we can get.
Need to expire. Yeah, I don't want to expire. It's almost fun. It's kind of like, you know, if it was pre-recorded, it would just be perfect every time. This way, it's almost fun. It's like, you know, which word is going to be the word today that gives Paul difficulties? Because we all know English is hard. But welcome to the show. I'm Paul Rossi, president of 910 Drones. Really excited to have everybody here. We got Samuel. We got Terry. How you doing, Samuel?
I'm doing well. I was talking to you before the episode start. Terry, a quick question. Do you know what magnet fishing is based off our last episode?
I do.
Okay.
I did not watch last episode, but I do know what magnet fishing is.
I was just kind of curious if he did know.
Only.
Yeah. I think it's just a younger generation thing.
Yeah. No, it's just a, yeah. And magnet fishing. And I guess it's a lot of, it's like, it's one of those FYP pages, you know, you're scrolling along, you never seen magnet fishing. It stands out. How you doing, Terry?
I've been doing good, man. My last weekend took a lot out of me mentally, but I'm trying to recover currently.
Oh, man.
Cindy, you had those on your trip?
Mentally.
Long weekend. No.
No. Okay. I thought you were going
President
up near the mountains.
President Nicole I went to, but.
Wasn't sure if you'd see any UFOs or space trash coming out near your way.
Did you get any SpaceX debris?
That would be my luck, getting hit by something.
Oof.
We got some great, great stuff to discuss this week. We'll be diving into some Beyond Visual Line of Sight conversation, approvals taking place in the state of Michigan. We'll talk about counter UAS. I think Terry found something interesting that we'll kind of look at. We'll talk about something that's not necessarily drone related, but it's electric and it has to do with NASCAR. So that'll be neat. We'll be talking about Asylon Robotics again and an accomplishment that they achieved over the last week. I know we talked about them in one of our previous episodes, and then we'll end the day or end the episode here, not the day, but our Weekly Wings episode in the regulatory corner, just talking about the FAA's new FREA map that they have published for folks to look at and see where their nearest FREA is. And with that, we're going to head to the great state of Michigan. Who's ever been to Michigan?
It's on the to-do list. We got to check that one off.
I don't think I want to go.
What?
No.
Why, Terry?
Have you not seen 8 Mile?
I'm watching Mayor of Kingstown right now, and it doesn't... I know that's a fictional show, but, I mean, there's got to be some type of truth to that.
All right, did you say Mayor?
Go there, ever.
Mayor.
Yeah.
Okay. There's another show similar called Mayor of East.
Sorry, it's a little.
Yeah. Two different shows.
I think the same dude makes it. It's a little hard for me to talk. I got new rubber bands in my mouth. A little weird.
You got new what? New diamonds? You got a new grill?
new rubber bands.
For context,
that's
for your braces, right, Terry?
My braces, yep.
Gotcha. Okay.
Got to get it straight. Idiot straight in Michigan, where I think Terry's okay on not visiting. Samuel's all in automotive capital of America. We have ground-based detect and avoid facilitates FAA BV loss waiver at Michigan test site. So an integration of the UAvionics Cassia G system enables advanced drone operations. Unmanned vehicle technologies, known as UVT in the industry, Chris Fink, great person, leading a really awesome company launched out of Fayetteville, Arkansas. But UVT and UAvionics have announced that UVT has been granted a Federal Aviation Administration waiver to operate small unmanned aircraft systems beyond visual line of sight at their test site in Michigan. Beyond visual line of sight at their test site in Michigan. So how about that? That's what's out there in Michigan.
Looks cold.
A little bit of drone technology and then nothing else. Yeah. Maybe some bad drinking water.
Well, also the auto, what was that, Paul? The automotive, my mind. You mentioned the automotive industry. There we go.
Yeah, like Detroit being a huge automotive capital.
Yeah. So not lots just of cars bad, made there. Water.
What you're looking at here.
That's what Terry said. Quote.
What you're seeing here. Yeah. So what you're seeing here, right, is what would normally be considered like a communications tower. Someone might put this up for, you know, a local radio communications, public safety, utilities. You could put something up on here in order to receive some sort of service. Well, now what you can see mounted here, what will be the top of this tower. And we're just, for folks listening on audio, it's, I think it says in here, it's about an 80-foot tower. Not entirely sure. Tall, but it's just one of those little triangular, speaking of triangles, Terry, you know, a triangle tower that you would see in the back or on a piece of property in a more rural area. And on top, this is an electronic visual observer.
I'm assuming kind of the first of its kind in this field.
Yeah, so UAvionics.
It makes sense, Michigan, now, because, I mean, looking at this photo and seeing, like, there's not a whole lot of people around, this would be a pretty good way to be able to pick out the drones, as they're, in my opinion, like, start small and then slowly get bigger and bigger with more population.
Yeah, so you can see this. So an electronic visual observer. So not so much like the population density, but really it's just at this point, it's looking at, you know, airspace, being able to detect and avoid.
I guess that'd be the
So this
the
is
key
ground.
Thing.
So this is ground-based detect and avoid. So what you're doing is taking this, which is, you know, pole mounted, constant power, constant internet. And this is just cameras that are designed to do nothing but just scan the field of view and search for and identify moving aircraft.
Over at 360.
The same way. 360 degrees. The same way that a human could stand, and even a human would have to, you know, rotate constantly and not have full 360 degree view.
It's one hell of a visual observer.
And this is
AI.
One hell of a visual observer is correct.
So they're going to mount this bad boy on that 80-foot pole is what we're.
Yes. And so this is integrating into like a drone in the dock solution. You can see it's right here. You got a more wide open flat area. You've got Flight Base. Flight Base is taking this. So Flight Base is that third party software that allows you to fly your drone. But with this mounted on top of this pole, it's going to allow that Cassia G to be above the nearby obstacles. Like a person standing on the ground is going to be blocked by this building.
Right.
Whereas now this will be able to get above the nearby obstacles.
So is it purely just using the cameras on it? So would it theoretically detect birds?
So it's going to have, once a bird gets so far from this sensor, the bird's only going to take up like a pixel or a half a pixel. So once the bird gets so far away, the size will become, you know, irrelevant. Right. Whereas the bigger the aircraft, the earlier it will be able to detect it because of the size that it's showing up on the sensor. So if a bird does fly by this thing very...
It has other sensors to detect the size of an image or object in the image, essentially.
Software. The software.
Hence one of the reasons for the constant internet. It's pinging back and forth with the software and analyzing and kind of being like, hey, the bird, plane, bird, plane. Gotcha. Cloud.
And then it's doing that in 360 degrees.
Yeah, I wonder, I mean, it's got to be pretty hard to distinguish a bird, particularly one that moves kind of slow and at a steady pace at distance, between like a drone. Like, I wonder how accurate it is, or if they just call all birds drones and you just worry about them.
I can't imagine they do, though.
And so that's...
I feel like they would have that distinction. I know, I don't know if you've seen the drone videos of they disguise their drone as a bird, but I still feel like this software seems pretty powerful. I feel like it can have some distinction.
I remember seeing somebody putting a squirrel on a drone and flying it around, like a taxidermied squirrel.
Was that on your For You page?
And so
it was.
Sorry, Paul, go ahead.
And so, this is ground-based detect and alert, right, with cameras.
Mm.
So it's alerting the operator that there's a aircraft in your operational volume. And what we've looked at, I don't remember, I think we did look at this in a previous, because I think we mentioned Claymore.
I feel like this came up in passing.
Matrix Space.
We definitely talked about this.
Yeah. So now, Matrix Space got 1.25 million in funding. That's what it was. There was an article that we talked about that this company got funding. This is radar. So this is going to do the same thing. It's going to detect objects in the airspace, but instead of using visual, like a camera, this is using radar technology. And so what they don't, it's hard to find some of the details in here, but this radar is trying to hit the surface of an object to detect its location. So the bigger the object is, right, the bigger an object is, the easier it is to see when it's far away. Right?
Yeah.
Big plane, far away, easy to see. Small plane, far away, hard to see. Small drone, far away, even harder to see. So that's true for your visual eye. But when you're sending a radar out, right, and those beams are going and the size of the aircraft is getting smaller the further it gets from the radar, it's less likely to detect it. So birds become undetectable at distances that aircraft are still detectable.
Makes sense.
Which is positive because the further away you get, the less you want to know about birds and the more you want to know about the airplanes.
You're right.
That's that whole argument is like, yeah, well, here's the cameras, but at this range, how effective is that sensor, whether it's a visual sensor or a radar? And then these have effective ranges, which become radius. And then using that radius, you can go in and you can say, well, this is what we need in order to have full coverage.
Hmm. It's a pretty impressive piece of technology. For this?
The range for this,
like one unit,
that's a solid question that you might be able to. Single node max range, 3,024 meters. Your average range for a single node is going to be 2,126 meters. So these are not like airport, you know, like an airport radar system is super sophisticated. Its size is significant and it's going to detect aircraft at a very large radius, range, and altitude. Whereas these systems that are coming out are pretty tight.
Yeah.
And then you ask yourself, well, when they say average range, is that the diameter or the radius?
Yeah, I'm kind of confused on the two numbers we got there. Like, does it do 3,000 meters or does it not do that?
If it's mounted on and it's perfectly flat, like if you got, it's just like, how long will this battery last? Well, 40 minutes in perfect ideal conditions. Or what's the range of your drone's remote controller? Well, if you're in an urban environment with a lot of, frequencies that are, fighting, for lack of a better word, with one another, congestion, your range is going to be shorter. But if you're in the middle of Montana, flat land, you know, nothing around, your range is now going to be longer.
I just want to point out that max temperature, 122 Fahrenheit. That's crazy. 50 Celsius. Wow.
It has to be. This thing is just sitting. Yeah. Like,
can't melt. Can't.
This photo was even baking. Called Desert Photo or something like that.
Built to last.
It's got to be high up and it can't be shaded. So right. It has to sit in sun constantly.
Does it have cameras on top of it? Because it's kind of like got the little mushroom thing on top.
Good question. And we can go back to our original article for this wonderful photo of it going up. No cameras on top.
Not. So it can't see anything above it. So
by the time it's on top. Yeah, I think it's like, that is... It's the idea of detecting it right before it's in that area. And so you set this up, and this is what's going to enable beyond visual line of sight is these electronic visual observers, whether it's radar, or optical, visual. People might find ways to use thermal, you know, at night. I don't know what their camera quality is and what they have built into it, but what the challenge is during the day versus night. And, some radar technology might be effective in light rain and various weather conditions where visual sensors might fog up or have other, you know, issues. Hmm.
Notably, no price point on that bad boy.
The price point on that, if you're talking like again, this is a tool like a forklift or some other kind of business technology, a computer that lets you, that automates things. So they're the cost isn't going to be $10,000. It's going to be like, hey, this is as effective as five people. You know, this is as effective as three people. And what would three people cost you? So 50, 60, 70, hey, $100,000 for what it is going to enable, that cost is somewhat justifiable. Hmm. Not for everybody, but
you
for the people that can afford
the
drones. And
yeah,
if you're going to cover a downtown, if you're going to cover a Wake County, if you're going to cover a Cumberland County, a Fayetteville, North Carolina, if you're trying to cover a whole region, yes. If you're trying to do security for a property, for a business, if you're trying to do localized operations, a substation inspection, then one would be just fine.
As far, one more thing, and then we can move off the story, but do we know specifically what kind of tests they want to do in Michigan with those radars? Because, I mean, it's drone tests detecting.
Yeah, so great question. Great question. Unmanned Vehicle Technologies is a reseller, a drone sales and training organization. So they're helping end users integrate this technology into their business. So working with public safety departments, UVT is helping start drone as a first responder programs. You know, they have locations and employees all across the United States. So they're helping businesses and organizations integrate this technology. So at their site, they're going to be able to test out even the sensor itself. When they have new updates, new improvements, a new sensor comes out, they can bring it to that location, put it on that mask, you know, use this, you know, waiver data. They can demonstrate to customers what the technology is capable of.
Sounds good.
Like a playground. Not a yeah. It's not a playground.
Yeah,
a research,
what you're
learning,
saying is fitting,
a
though.
Development.
Yeah. That good old R&D.
R&D.
There it is.
Yeah. All right. What are we looking at here, Terry?
So something interesting came across my For You page since I'm so young. I have to be on TikTok constantly.
This gadget is helping to tackle drones.
Very loud.
At 2020 European Soccer Championships.
It's just basically a drone gun. I believe it can kind of like control them. I don't know how well that would work. But they're using it at the Euros, like one of the biggest soccer tournaments.
Stadiums have restricted airspaces during the championship games.
Cool,
and this will go some way to keeping the players and the fans safe.
Because they have to deal with streakers, people flying stuff. I mean, it's an open air stadium, so you're gonna have to deal with people like that.
This clever gadget.
Does he have that AI voice?
Yes.
Okay.
It's Unilab.
Unilab? Is that what we're AI voice?
No, it's just Unilad's the people that made the video.
Oh.
It's like a news company.
So this counter UAS is big, not just detecting, like we're talking about detecting and being able to see what's in the airspace. But once you know that, once you identify, right, that the that drone is not authorized, you know, what can you do to counter its activities? And these types of devices that kind of like mimic the remote, so it creates like a disconnect, but I think it's almost like hijacking per se. The drone itself, and it's mimicking the remote controller, and it's telling it, hey, land here. This guy's got some sweet tights on, by the way.
Yeah, I did not even notice that, but yeah, he does. He's ready to play some soccer.
And if you'll notice on the, I'm going to call it the gun. If you notice, they're using like a $4,000, or not, maybe not $4,000. It's a very expensive sight made for a firearm. So.
Are you sure? I think that's like PVC pipe painted black with
a
trash
can
lid on it.
Right there in front of his. I see an EOTech.
It's a
right there, right on your mouse.
There's just a lot going on in this video.
It's expensive,
apparently.
Man. I want one. I can't afford it.
Terry, what to have it?
Just put it on stuff.
Yeah.
It's intense.
The whole drone gun thing. What would you call it? A drone disabler?
Jam device.
Yeah, and I'm not exactly sure who makes it. I was trying to do some research on it. I think San Fran, San Fran Group. I think they're the ones who make it. But I can't find any links or anything where you could buy it. But yeah, they make a lot of stuff. So I was trying to scroll through their products. They make crew seats for like spacecrafts, air conditioners, like whatever you want, basically. I think it's called the Skyjacker, if anybody wants to go look it up.
Yeah, Drone Shield. That's the one that I was thinking of. Drone Shield is one.
That looks like a weird 80s sci-fi movie prop. Is anyone else getting
right,
that?
Like
RoboCop.
Yeah.
I can only imagine how much that weighs. They probably got to have like a crazy battery.
I mean, they make it look pretty...
It looks cool.
Like violent or just like a... Like an actual
it's got the scare
projectile
factor.
Is going to come out. Long range, immediate video cease. So it immediately, this one right here, immediately cuts video back to the pilot.
Wow.
GNS disruption. So it's disrupting the satellite navigation.
Easy to use. I hope so. You just point at something. And you just
point and shoot.
Hit the trigger if it has one.
The drone gun.
It's funny how different
it doesn't
this looks
look like
from
it has
other
a trigger.
Thing,
right. That's why when I saw that one pop up on the... I was like, geez. Like, I guess they want theirs to look less violent. I don't know.
I can't imagine trucking that thing along, though.
But the other one looked like, for people that are just listening, it looked like a potato gun with, like, something
scope.
Wrapped around it.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, make sure you're leaning forward in case it recoils.
Well, it looked like a rail gun. Like, if I imagined what a rail gun would look like, that would be it.
And so people will say things like, oh, if my drone loses connection, it'll just fly home. And it's like, yeah, how's your drone going to fly home when it doesn't have GPS? Like, this is the whole thing. They're disrupting it, disconnecting your video feed, messing with your GPS. Drone doesn't know where it is. It's not going to be able to come back, and they're telling it to land. So they're like sending a weird set of signals, and it's not going to be like a perfect landing. You know,
yeah, it's like a lasso. It's like an invisible lasso.
Yeah. New day and age, isn't it?
And so those are the types of things where you have the detection at these stadiums. But again, once you detect it and you know, like in the military, it's called IFF, like identify friend from foe. So you have these military bases, right? You got aircraft coming in constantly. And so you're not like, hey, let's make sure that that's a friendly helicopter. Like, how long do you wait before you can tell? And it's all electronic. So when friendly aircraft are flying into a base in Afghanistan, there's an electronic system in place where the helicopter or the plane is sending a code. constantly, because it's like, I don't want those people, I don't want the detection system to think that I'm a threat. So I'm sending the special code, and the detection system around the base receives that code and validates it, and it allows that aircraft to penetrate, cross, enter, even though you have that security system in place. Now, if there's an aircraft coming towards that base and it's not sending a valid code, that anti-aircraft security detection protection system is going to shoot that aircraft down. No questions asked. It's just an invisible fence that exists. And if you say, well, we weren't sure, and then that thing causes death, you're failing. So at a stadium, at a park, at a baseball park, at these high risk areas, prisons, jails, you know, how do you set up systems to detect and then remove or eliminate the threat itself? What, moving on here to our next really neat thing, Samuel, what are we bringing up here from the
Verge?
That's
not a drone show. It is a NASCAR EV prototype. It looks like, NASCAR is sticking their toes into the EV division of things and just trying it out, seeing how it looks. But, it's just kind of weird because for those that have been near EVs, they don't have that signature noise. Although there have been a lot of cars that will actually, EV cars specifically, that will emulate engine noises now, which whole another side topic. But NASCAR showed off a new EV prototype at the Chicago Street Race, which we mentioned, I think, what was that? I mentioned it last, was it last episode? I think.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Three electric motors, one in the front, two in the back, powered by a 78 kilowatt liquid cooler battery that can generate 1,000 kilowatt at peak power. Some of these factoids are going a little above me with those electric. I can't think of the word, but all that electric stuff going on.
Stats, pretty impressive. Specs.
Yeah, there we go.
What's the point of this? I don't understand. It's isn't like the whole point of NASCAR to like go like drink beer, watch something loud go around on the lap? Because they're not doing anything like crazy, right? They're just taking a left turn.
I think it's specifically where this is introduced, isn't it? It's not introduced at those typical races. This is at something a little different. It's at a street race in Chicago, isn't it?
Terry's got to watch. You got to go back and see it's that left turn mentality. So that's why NASCAR is going to the streets. And when you look back to NASCAR and bootlegging and the racing and the speed, right? It's these combination like Daytona, the Daytona race used to be a race that was partly on the beach and on the road. Like there wasn't a Daytona Speedway when racing started. So it was an actual beach race. And then it was actually on the roads. And as it developed, it was like, all right, we need these cars they've gotten loud and faster and noisier and they're on tracks now. But the Chicago Street Race was exactly the opposite. It's a race in the street. They shut the roads down. It's very similar. Things are getting very similar to the way Formula racing is internationally. So I don't know. Let me go back. So
now that did have a signature sound to it.
It's a different. It's a completely different noise.
Sounds like you're in the Jetsons.
If you have a pack of 40 of these electric vehicles, it's not the exhaust, your traditional, you know, gas engine vehicle. It's going to be a sound of just a lot of electricity, a lot of power, a lot of energy moving, and it's going to sound I don't know, like a movie from the future. And these stats, when you have three motors, I mean, having three motors is like your highest end electric vehicle you could buy, you know, on the commercial side. But that's a motor moving your two front tires and then one motor moving each of your back tires. That is an insane amount of energy. The battery size is 78 kilowatt hours is very similar to a Tesla. Right? 80 kilowatt hours. So the battery size and volume, whether it's charged or not full charged, the weight stays the same. So you see in NASCAR with the fuel and the size of the tank and having to manage that, you know, there is some limitations. How they charge these things and what that would look like, it'd be interesting. But they have Formula E or E1. So they're actually doing, you know, electric car.
Formula E.
Yeah, electric car racing, electric boat racing too.
I just don't like EVs.
Ciao.
They literally have ka-chow in the article.
I'm all for hybrids.
Yeah, is now the right time to say ka-chow? Because this exactly reminds me of like Cars 3 when you have Jackson Storm, right? The new race car. When that new race car shows up, if go back and watch the movie, Jackson Storm goes by. He's not going by going. Jackson Storm goes by. It's like, wheel. It's like that was an awful impression of Jackson Storm.
I like how you know his name.
I haven't seen Cars 3. I can't believe Hall has that on me.
He's first and last.
Stress the importance of engineering.
It sounds just like I'm turning volume up right now. So if you're in a library, you may want to turn the volume down. Let's see what happens here. Is that loud, Bob? Like
those brakes, man. Sound hideous.
I didn't know what that was too. Like it's
that was the brakes.
It sounds
it's the
so,
motor though because the motor stops. It's
wow. Oh no, man! I just don't like EVs. I'll be a number one EV hater until the end.
But the see this. Listen, that's the car stopping, Terry, because the electric motors also make that really weird noise.
The brakes, most likely. Race car brakes have to have a lot of more power behind them. They have to stop faster.
I'm going to throw another EV article in next week as well, just to keep that theme going now.
Yeah. I wonder what the specs are on it and all that, but that's really cool. The thing is, how would you charge that? I do think there could come a time where, you know how drones are going to have contactless charging and phones can have contactless charging, like the tires will have something, and then the road is gonna have basically you charge while you drive, right, Terry?
I think that's already been proposed. I don't know. I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was Nevada, but I think Elon Musk was one of the first people. I've seen a few different articles about it, but Elon Musk wants to put charging in his little like tunnels.
In his loop, the Vegas loop.
Yeah, he wants to put chargers in the bottom of the tunnel. So while you're driving on it, you're charging.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
I don't think that was the first one. I did see something else about it.
Time. Eventually, it'll be here. With all this.
Mm-mm. I don't like it.
With all this future stuff happening.
Let's use hybrids. Those are really cool hybrids.
Yeah, I got this thing from Duke Energy. It was like, all right, you wanted to know how to, you know, save money with energy. If you have a hybrid, keep it plugged in so you're using more battery than gas. And it's like, oh, you're the electric company. You sell electricity. You're encouraging people to use a lot of electricity in order to save money. That sounds...
Let's create a lot of e-waste.
Yeah. That's all right. I've got the nuclear plant I just tell everybody just I use nuclear energy. Right? It's clean.
Sorry,
I don't know. The warning goes off when you're having children. The warning goes off like every 45 minutes.
Ah,
there could be.
I don't understand why we don't use nuclear energy. I don't understand.
We are.
Yeah. So not very much of it.
Well, moving on to our next topic here, to kind of keep on the semi focused here. Drone Life article, Asselon Robotics celebrates 100,000th drone dog mission, showcasing innovative security solutions. And I just want to say, what an episode, because now we're talking drone dogs, and we had a nice flow from drones in the sky to electric NASCAR, and now we're here with circling back to our robot security perimeter dogs in their dog houses. So congratulations to Asselon Robotics for their accomplishment of over 100,000 missions with the drone dog system. That's pretty awesome.
I realize we need a soundboard.
Looks like they're using. Right.
That's what we need.
We need a sound. We do. Yeah. We do. The pup pack. Do you see this?
Define 100,000 missions. So Boston what is a mission?
The dog leaves the dock.
Ah.
Like if you went and delivered something, if you flew the drone on a flight, it's a mission. If the dog house opens and then the drone dog deploys.
They went and played fetch. All right, Samuel.
That's his mission.
That was their missions.
He had a mission. Go play fetch.
Their pup pack. You see that? So the Boston, they're taking Boston Dynamics, a Massachusetts-based company, the Spot ground bot, and they're enhancing it with their pup pack, which comes in a variety of Paw Patrol flavors. You can get your Chase or just to stay on theme, right, with the Ka-Chow. No. But their sensor and cameras, which kind of take Spot and turn it into more of a security-based ground-based robot system.
And that was 100,000.
So a deployment would be the box 100,000. So like customer deployments. So right, they're putting these at their customers' locations, and if a sensor goes off, if you know an alert or a patrol or you know even a scheduled patrol, all these would be considered a mission, either a routine scheduled mission or an unscheduled, right, non-routine type mission.
Can you Terry, zoom we in don't, on that picture real quick? I'm sorry.
Terry, we don't like the EVs, but do we like the e-dogs?
We do.
Okay.
That's a weird place. I'm pretty sure that's a power supply right there in the middle. That's a weird place to put that.
Well, this? Where it's about to lay down?
No, right underneath it. It's like angled.
Oh, yeah.
That looks like a fan.
Huh.
PSUs have fans on them.
Well, I think this is a fan. I think this and this, because what this drone or drone, it'll crouch down. I think when the thing closes, you're right. Like it'll crouch down and this is for wireless charge or this is for recharging.
Could you,
so while it charges,
like,
it can cool it.
I was going to say, do they have like a solar panel for the doghouse? I think that'd be really cool if it was just self-sustaining.
You could probably connect it and use solar, but from a security standpoint, if it's cloudy that day, you don't want your security solution to go offline. So I think from a security standpoint, you would just want it.
Yeah.
I'm tired.
I
didn't get enough sun today.
Yeah.
What were you going to say, Terry?
You're going to hate me, Paul, but I just looked up the schematics to the dock, and it is in fact a PSU.
What? Where?
I didn't mean to. Let's see. It's that, by the way, the charging dock is made by Boston Dynamics. I mean,
you were on that with the schematics, Terry. You were ready.
There's a link to it.
Show your screen. Let me see what you're talking about. The dock you're saying is made by Boston Dynamics?
The charging part. Not like the box itself, but like the...
they probably took the charger and literally just put it in a box.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm saying. I sent the link in Discord if you want to pull it up. But.
And so you could either have this, like if you're a different business, you might have the dog walk inside at night, or you might carry drive spot back to your office, and then the...
What is Spot going to do if he sees
this thing is going to sit. Yeah, exactly.
Look at you with frustration.
I think you'll call the cops on you.
This, I would guess, is a fan right here, Terry.
For the PSU.
Yeah, so it's so as it's recharging rapidly, this is just blowing, and then these are the contacts.
It has them labeled below this.
Oh, look at that.
Oh.
I mean, it can't go in the dock and then magic just brings it back to life.
No, you're actually right. I'm on one today. No, that is that sole purpose of that little box right there. It's just to spit air onto the battery of the dog.
It gets hot. Yeah,
it just cools it. Well, because
let's cut it
there's
out.
There's so much energy. And I know this because when you look at the dock too.
We like install knives like on the legs? So like when it runs past somebody, it like slashes their Achilles heel. Is that possible?
You could. I mean, you could theoretically. I don't think that was the design intention.
The rims that can slash people's tires. But what is it going to do? Is it going to bark at them? It's going to get a real dog to do that. It's cheaper.
Shit. Of course, there's no...
You're famous, Paul.
There's no thing of it, but yeah. But that's the biggest thing with these. Now, when you look at technology, whether it's the ground bot, the aerial bot, is you can put it in a dock, you can put it off-site, but you want these things to charge rapidly. Like, you know, you want it to land and then recharge and then get right back to work and land, so... Battery, drone comes back, dog comes back. It's just been running and working a bunch. It's going to be very warm. So in order to recharge it immediately, you just got to start blasting the battery and the unit with cold air. And that's what helps alleviate damage. If you take a battery right out of a drone and just put it on a charger in warm conditions, you're going to hurt it in the long run. But if you can cool it down, it's fat, like try to cool that thing down super, super fast. It's like the formula cars. You know how as soon as they stop, they have to take like the blowers and shove it into the into the intake. So when a formula race car stops, it's still so warm that they actually will put these coolers into the intake and continue to push cold air into the engines so that they won't damage themselves. That's kind of what you're seeing with these robotic systems, is they're cooling them super fast. And then also I'd imagine it might even provide heating. Like it might, well, no, because it wasn't designed for the dog house type thing. Where the heck, if I can get a dang photo.
Have you gotten to see one in real life yet, Terry?
The like Boston Dynamics dog thing?
Yeah.
Robo dog.
I will say, like,
there are some pretty cheap ones you can buy, not made by Boston Dynamic. Those are very expensive, but there are cheaper ones that are like, I think they get down to like $500, and I kind of want to grab one. So if you guys see one just roaming around on my bed in a few weeks, that's why.
It'd be pretty cool.
This, I'll show this right here. This is the best picture I can find just right now. This is the Dock 2 for DJI. So when the drone lands, it's actually turned 90 degrees from what you see right now on this photo. Mm-hmm. The drone camera is going to face the H, and the drone is going to land right here. So you see this? That right there is where the battery is going to sit, and it's going to wirelessly charge the drone through the surface.
Right.
And as it's charging, it is blowing cool air directly onto the back of the battery, and it is cooling it while it's recharging in order to reduce the damage or the, you know, the stress. And then also what this dock can do is it can heat. So if it's cold outside, drone lands and drone's hanging out inside, the dock will actually produce heat as well in order to keep it warm and cozy. But shout out to Asilon for their 100,000 missions. Looking forward to eventually maybe seeing one of those somewhere. Not just the spot, but to go, oh, hey, there's... And honestly, if it's not walking around, you almost wouldn't even know. This looks like any other electric utility box, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Blends in pretty well.
You can walk by one and might not even know it. It's pretty neat. It'll be crazy when they're buried. It's buried in the ground, and all of a sudden, it just like pops out,
like a mole man.
Should we band together and buy a robot dog?
Where do you want it to live, Terry?
$2,400. We can take turns every weekend. It swaps.
Rotate it out. How do you think your kids would respond, Paul?
When you go on vacation,
yeah,
they probably like it. And I've seen those things take some damage. I saw someone throw one of those little ones around, just toss it and toss it, and like just kick it. And like, dude, watch your 3-year old whack your dog in the face, and you're just like, what'd you do that for? You know? And so the neat thing is you can just put it in sleep mode. If you go on vacation, you're like, all right, I don't have to take you and I don't have to put you in a kennel. Go to sleep, dog. If you want it to be a dog, you could also have your electronic thing be a cat. Go to sleep, cat.
Do you think if like you're the person that you're sending it to lives close enough, like maybe me and Samuel, it's kind of far, but not really.
Couple
just
miles.
Like tell it to go to Samuel, just like shoo. And it goes to you.
Just walk itself. Be like,
don't get hit by a car.
You know what? You go to Samuel's house. Gets hit by a car.
Yeah, send me a link, Terry. Show me.
You're like,
show me what
you're
you,
like,
you're looking at this. Kind of interested now.
All right, I got you.
You guys could create a spinoff. Yeah, you guys could create a spinoff podcast YouTube channel with this. You know, you could hit everyone's For You page. You could be doing TikToks with it. You could be, that would be cool. That'd
today be cool. We sent Spot to Terry's house,
well,
you know, just filming it.
It didn't make it. It didn't make it. We'll try again tomorrow. Spot got
killed it.
He got scared and malfunctioned. We found him curled up in a ball with its light flashing red fast.
Oh man.
We forgot to upload the latest maps to its database. Well, episode coming to an end here. The last thing I wanted to touch on, another Drone Life article, FAA releases the new FREIA map for drone pilots. So finding FAA recognized identification areas is made easier with new online maps. So what is a FREIA, right? The FAA recognized identification area. FREIAs are locations where, now that remote ID is in effect, if your drone does not have remote ID capabilities, right? If your drone does not have remote ID, standard remote ID, or a broadcast module, then you have to fly in one of these FREIAs. Drones with standard remote ID, what that means is that the drone, it's built into the drone, it's built into the remote controller and the drone are working together, and you have the ability to connect that to a network, per se. broadcast remote ID module. That's when it's not built into the drone from the factory. You take a module like this yellow thing, you're attaching it to the drone. The drone's broadcasting where it is. Excellent. That's drones with remote ID broadcast module. Fly wherever you want. If you don't have A or B, standard remote ID or broadcast module, now you got to fly in the FRIA. This is where people are getting pissed. They're getting upset, right? There's a list on this site or in this article, certain drones that do or don't have remote ID. FRIA, it's one of those locations where you can fly, visual line of sight, a drone that doesn't have to be the latest and greatest. It doesn't have to have built-in remote ID. It doesn't even have to have a broadcast module. But these areas are going to be, you know, it's not, you can't even fly in your backyard now. Like you, if your drone does not have remote ID, you have to go to a FRIA, which ends up being like maybe a park locally. People get together. Hobby fixed wing pilots have been flying in these areas for quite a while.
Those broadcast modules cost around $200.
There are some options about $89, $79. Some go up to $300. We've worked with a couple in the past. Drone Tag is a company. Drone Tag actually makes a couple different options, and I will just share this real quick. We're not endorsing, or we're not a partner or affiliate of Drone Tags. It's just the one that, again, I've used. Drone Tag makes a Drone Tag Mini, which can go on like a, you know, a small lightweight drone like a DJI Mini. They make the Drone Tag Beacon, which is what I've used before. It's 199 euros, which I think is like 230 American dollars or something like that. Charges with a USB, has some lights on it. Compliant. You can see it's about the size of a little bigger than a quarter. Pop this onto your drone. Not really going to affect the flight time or performance in a noticeable. They also have the Drone Tag BS. What does BS stand for? Well, it stands for black sheep. So the Drone Tag black sheep came out for the FPV pilots, the folks who are really pissed and not happy with remote ID. So you can see the cost is much lower. You're buying a tiny module that you can put right onto your FPV first person racing drone, about the size of a bottle cap. So low power consumption, low weight. So there's companies that are just providing options for all different levels in order to be compliant. So then you can fly wherever you want. But if your drone's not compliant, you got to stick to these authorized areas.
Pretty cool.
Fantastic episode today. We covered a lot of different range of things. From remote ID and regulatory corner to new tech. And then also looking at some proven tech, celebrating milestones of 100,000 missions. That's really significant. So really cool to see what's been done in a short amount of time. And you know, as always, I'm grateful to be a part of this industry and help introduce and educate and pass on some information to our audience. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Great episode. We touched on beyond visual line of sight waiver for UVT at the Michigan test site, counter drones for 2024 Euros and sporting events, NASCAR going electric, showcasing an EV at the Chicago Road Race. Again, big congrats to Aslan Robotics and their 100,000 milestone. And we just finished things up talking about the new FRIA map. If you ever have any questions, comments, email editor@dronelife.com. We appreciate everybody tuning in and look forward to having you next week. Thank you, everybody.
Have a good one.